Paul Walsh is in our Limerick studio. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Brendan.
And Paul, you're here today to tell us the story of your late brother, Dennis Walsh, whose remains were missing, unnecessarily missing, really, you would argue, for 25 years until this year. And look, Paul, I know Dennis had changed in the years before he died, but maybe if we start with, tell us a bit about the Dennis you knew before that. What kind of a guy was he?
Well, Dennis was born in 1972. He was the youngest of five children, so he was always the sort of baby of the family, even though he became the tallest. I left home when he was 14 to go to England, and at that stage he was just the bright and bubblyest person in the house. He was full of devilment, loved winding up his brother, who was 2 years older than him. And he was into every sport imaginable. Played rugby with Shannon, played hurling in Gaelic with Napiershig, played soccer with the street leagues, everything. And just really had a really happy childhood.
Yeah, so not the kind of guy you'd be worried about at all, or a parent to be worried about, really.
There was nothing there to suggest that at all, no.
And then it was after his leaving cert in 1991, was it? He headed to Amsterdam, and you feel that kind of changed him then?
Yeah, he did leave in 1990, and then in the summer of 1991, he and a number of friends went to Amsterdam, and just for a summer to do a bit of odd jobbing work, try and earn a bit of money and to have basically a good time. So at one stage they had some... went into one of the cafes and, to the best of our knowledge, had some space cakes, etc. And from what we hear, there was about four of them, maybe five, and they each had a reaction to it, but Dennis had the worst. And when he came back to Ireland then, he came back a changed person.
OK, so something was kind of broken in him after that. And listen, his behaviour changed then as well, like that he was smoking weed a lot. He dropped out of college and but then he headed for the trip to TIP as well. And you feel there was another event of some kind there similar to Amsterdam?
Yeah, so he came back in late summer 91 from Amsterdam and wasn't himself. And he did go back to college, but he was disconnected from normal life, really. And but it was the following year then that he went to Thurles with a group of friends and had another episode there. And the lads were really worried about him and told my parents when they all came back. And Dennis was very strange then. He didn't want to, he didn't want to sleep in the house. He wanted to sleep outside and, you know, things that just weren't normal behaviour at all.
And he got a diagnosis at that point, did he?
He did. At the time, it was known as manic depression. It's now known as bipolar disorder. So he spent the next 5 years getting treatment and being on medication. I think it was lithium, but he would regularly come off the lithium. So it was an up and down 5 years.
Yeah. And was he okay when he would take his meds? He was.
I wouldn't say he was okay. Yeah. He was a subdued person. He never really got back to the old Dennis. So yeah. the meds sort of controlled him, really. You know, just so he would still lope around the house, etc. I'm saying this. I have to say that I was in London all this time living, so I'm getting this from my mum and dad. I came home a few times and could see it. And he came over to me actually once or twice as well in London. So, but he was never the same person.
Yeah. So, and you see, you can see the frustration with somebody taking this drug that is knocking the stuffing out of them, that they don't want to be like that either. You know. So yeah. And listen, this must be very hard on your parents, like to see your kid change like that and to see him obviously kind of in a lot of pain, yeah?
Yeah, it was terrible. You can imagine, they just didn't know what to do. All they could do was, in a situation like that, was offer love. They When it's a mental illness, you can't, you know, rest there and put your leg up or something. You know, you can't do anything like that. All you can do is be supportive. And sometimes that support is rejected and even used against you, that, you know, you're interfering. It was very, very difficult for them.
Yeah, very hard for them. And I don't mean to say that your mother seems like an innocent kind of person, but like, you see her, Dennis is in a documentary, and your mother, the story is, and your mother talks about him, but there is, it would break your heart, like, seeing your mother, and she talks about how close she is to Dennis, and she clearly was mad about him and would have done anything for him.
Yes. Now, I'd have to say that, you know, that she does that to all of us. You know, you're a stereotypical Irish mother. Yeah. And so I wouldn't say that she showed him any favouritism. It was just that she just smothered him in. That smothered sounds is the incorrect term. But she just gave him as much love as she could. And you can imagine how frustrating that was.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
She did have, she has tremendous faith. So that keeps her going, I suppose.
Yeah. And listen, so what eventually happened, Dennis, in the end, is kind of a mystery, but we know his body washed up on Inishmore, wasn't it? But before we get to that, there was a previous incident in Salt Hill that you think might hold a clue.
Yes. So there was various incidents, you could say, over the 5 years where he did... there were sort of dramatic incidents, if you like. But one of them was himself and a group of friends went to Galway for an event, I'm not sure what. But at one stage, he started walking into the water and with a view to taking his own life. But he backed away from it. And there was another incident where he'd actually written... a note to say he was going to end his life, but he didn't. So, but the one concrete one we have is that he actually went into the water in Salt Hill,
okay,
but came out.
Okay, and so then he went missing kind of shortly after that. And God, it's funny in a way. Like, what do you do in a situation like that? But what she did as a family, was just a simple thing. You went looking for him. Your mum and dad went looking for him.
That's right. So we came home. My sister was away. I was away. We were in various stages of our lives, you know. So we came home for short periods and helped with the search. But mum and dad and I have to say, friends and some really lovely neighbours helped them going around the country. They went down to, I'd say, pretty much the whole country at some stage, but they specifically concentrated on Clare and Cork Clare and Galway, beg your pardon, in the early days, because they knew he had sort of connections. He would go to Ennis now and again and Galway now and again. So it was an especially intense period in the month after he went missing, and they made various trips to Galway and went into guard stations and handed out leaflets, etc., trying to, you know, just doing everything they could to find him.
And now that brings us to the nub of this. So when they went to Galway, so that was in early April 1996.
Yes.
And they went into the guard stations, handed in their flyers, told them about Dennis and everything. And then 24 hours after that, was it?
I wouldn't be 100% on the timelines. Basically, all I can say with certainty is that in the month of March and early April, Mum and Dad were going up and down to Galway.
Yeah.
And then on the 7th of April, a body was washed up on Inishmore. And brought to the mainland, I think the next day probably.
Okay, and that body, I believe, was quite decomposed, so there was no simple way of identifying the person, no dental records or fingerprints. But no one joined the dots there and said this could be Dennis Walsh's body.
Yeah, that's a source of tremendous frustration for us, Brendan, I have to say, because the Gardaí in their statements have said there was no identifiable marks on him. There was two small newspaper reports that suggested that he had brown hair, that he was over 6 foot, and that between 20 and 30, all of which matched Dennis. Mm. So if the the Gardaí in Galway had been in contact with the Gardaí in Limerick, or I suppose vice versa, then one would have assumed that they could put two and two together, but it just didn't happen.
Yeah, and look, in fairness, I think the guards say that the condition of the remains looked much older than 4 weeks, and I think communications then weren't what they are now either. So that's that side of it. So what happened, Dennis's remains then?
So then, his remains were taken to the mortuary in the what's now UHG in Galway, and they were kept there. And there was the doctor in charge of the mortuary there. I suppose there was suggestions that he should be buried, but I can't think of the doctor's name now, because he was very forward-looking in that he held on to the body for 18 years because he knew that advances were coming in DNA technology. So they took samples from the remains, I think more than once over that period. And as I said, I think that doctor's tenure came to an end for whatever reason in 2014. They had made the decision to bury Dennis.
Okay, and all the while, your family is left there not knowing. What does that do to a family, Paul, that 25 years of not knowing?
Well, it had various effects. For I had many dreams that Dennis came back, and I'm sure Mum and Dad had it as they'll. Have said, as Mab says in the program, she would speak to Dennis every night before she went to bed. It cast a pall over family events after that. I suppose if we had a funeral, we could have moved on to a certain extent. And to be honest, his siblings, we got on with our lives. But my mum and dad were younger then than I am now, and they faced into the next 25 years of tracking down every lead they got. Even I in London, at one stage, a good friend of the family reckoned he saw Dennis in a library in southwest London. So I spent 2 days there, waiting to see, and there was a chap came in eventually who I think that was the guy that he thought was him, but it wasn't, obviously. Yeah. And there was lots of what are now what we now know to be false leads. Yeah. So there was a lot of you could say wasted energy and time during that time.
Yeah, and God, when you say that about that, your parents then were younger than you are now, and like you're a father yourself now, and it probably makes you understand it in a whole different way as well, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. It just, I can't bear the thought of anything like that happening. It's just beyond belief, you know, that I just don't know. Until I would go through it, I would have no idea, yeah. But I wouldn't wish it on anyone.
No. And your mother, so Dennis's story is in that Virgin Media show, Ireland's Unidentified Bodies. Your mother waking up every morning saying, "Where are you, Dennis? Let me know where you are." And every night saying, "Sleep well, Dennis. Be happy." I mean, it doesn't bear thinking about. So it turns out then that all that time, Dennis's body was like the grave it ultimately ended up in wasn't far from your house at all. So your parents got a knock on the door in February, was it?
That's right, yeah. On a Friday evening in February, two Gardaí came to the door and informed Mum and Dad that a positive identification had been made on remains by the Forensic Science Ireland. So, and as Dennis, so they rang us then, and we, you know, came around, and it was a strange weekend, because we went to the Gardaí the next day, myself and my dad went up to the local station, and just to see what exactly the information was, but the weekend, the people who had given the information weren't there. And then we actually thought that, there's a body in Dublin, sorry. And we went arranging, starting to make funeral arrangements with the local undertakers, that sort of thing. Then the undertakers tried to find out where's this body. And so we had a weekend where we just didn't know what was happening. But on Monday and Tuesday, then we generally, the details came out that Dennis was in a communal grave in Bohermore in Galway.
And what did you do?
So First of all, we had to decide whether we wanted to leave him there or to bring him home. And it was a unanimous decision that we wanted to bring him home, because there are unidentified bodies in that grave, but there was one that had been identified, and that particular family had decided that to just leave the person in peace there. But we as a family wanted to bring him home to Limerick. Now, of course, this was during the strictest of the lockdowns, so we had that difficult to deal with. But we were also told that an inquest had to take place, and because of the way we were all locked down, it could take up to a year. But my sister and I, but especially my sister Anne, did so much ringing around and spoke with the coroner in Galway, the HSE in Galway, the county council in Galway, or the city council, I should say. And they were so helpful. And eventually we got permission to get the body exhumed in May. This was before the inquest would happen, which we were led to believe, first of all, the inquest would have to precede anything being done with the body. So thankfully we were able to have a proper funeral in May, and he's now buried just up the road from my house in Limerick.
And do you think, I mean, I suppose there was a lot of grieving done before then. Did your mum and dad get to grieve properly then? Did they get a sense of closure from bringing Dennis home?
A certain amount of closure, Brendan, but yeah. I would have to say that they're dealing with it in different ways. My dad is so angry about the last 25 years. Yeah. Mam, I suppose, is leaning on her faith. But as she says in the programme, that she's closing it out, she's blotting it out, because if she thinks about it, it'll just upset her.
Yeah.
So, and the thing about the grieving as well is that it's so strange, because we had 25 years where we were half grieving. Mm. And then in this year, we're grieving for something that happened 25 years ago. It's just, it's strange. But at the end of the day, Dennis is buried up the road from us, and Mam and Dad go to the grave every Sunday. So, you know, there is a certain amount of peace with that.
Yeah, but so hard for them after everything they've been through to carry this in now to the final years of their life, and your father kind of thinking about the what ifs and everything. It's really rough, isn't it? One of the things that they show throws up, Paul, is that there are other identified remains in morgues all over the country, and there's no database or list of them all or anything, so no idea how many people are out there.
Yeah, well, there are strides being made on that, in that, for instance, Forensic Science Ireland have, of the identified bodies that they know of, I think it's unidentified, beg your pardon, of I think it's 22 bodies or roughly. They have taken DNA samples from most of them. But so they're putting together a DNA database, but it's just that there doesn't seem to be a centralised database of unidentified bodies that people could access, that the likes of my family or other families now could access and do their own check. As we have said to various people, that it doesn't seem like it would take a massive resource to do this. It's more a case of taking information that's already there and just collating it and having it in a central repository where people could access it and almost do their own investigating. You know, in our case, we would have been checking this database every week, every month, whatever, you know, and doing, there wouldn't have to be a resource dedicated to it. The resource would only have to keep it up to date. The people, we could do the checking, but something along those lines. But I think it would help families immensely.
Yeah. Look, Paul, thanks a million for that. And you've been very honest about it. And I think a lot of people texting in, praising you here. This is such a devastating story. One texter said, such heartbreak. Paul is very brave and doing his brother a great justice. Fair play to him. And you are, Paul, doing your brother a great justice. And another texter says, deepest sympathies to Paul and his family. A loss like this will never really leave you, but he's doing as well as you could possibly be given the situation. And look, I'm sure I speak for everybody when I say give our best wishes to your parents. And I hope that this is something that that won't blight the rest of their lives too much. Listen, thanks so much,
Paul. Thanks, Brendan. Thanks for your time.
And Dennis Walsh's story is featured in Ireland's Unidentified Bodies, which you can watch on the Virgin Media Player now. And if you've been affected by any of the issues raised in Dennis's story there, you can get details of helplines on rte.ie/helplines. Let's take a break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.